Today's segment of Sound Balming is brought to you by Jimmy and Mary's Authentic Body Care. I cannot express to you how much we love, love, love their products. Although we use them all year, as the weather gets colder, we need these products even more. The dreaded drop in temperature, the dryness, the itchiness, and the unnecessary flakiness is inevitable. Shea Butter from Jimmy and Mary's Authentic Body Care is the only thing that works for my skin and hair needs. Not only do these products cure my dry skin, the whipped butter goes on smoothly and doesn't leave that uncomfortably thick, sticky residue. Bonus? It smells absolutely amazing. There are so many different scents to choose from too. Not only do they carry skincare products, there are products for authentic living, face, shower, hair and beard, spritzers and perfumes, and bath products. Let me tell you, we cannot even keep the stuff in the studio. The entire production team, as well as all our children, use Jimmy and Mary's product. Jimmy and Mary's take pride in creating quality, handcrafted products from simple ingredients for the entire family. Their products are made for all skin types and are 100% handmade, 100% vegan, and 100% cruelty-free. Skincare is important. Moisture is key, and keeping our skin and hair hydrated is essential. I cannot emphasize how much we trust Jimmy and Mary's for all of our skincare needs. Hurry on up to jimmyandmarys.com and check out their products. Did I mention service is fast and efficient too? Don't forget to mention that you heard about Jimmy and Mary's authentic skincare on Sound Balming. Use the discount code SOUNDBALM20 to get 15% off. That's SOUNDBALM20 for 15% off at Jimmy and Mary's Authentic Skin Care.
Hey everybody, welcome to Sound Balming. I created this show for people who want to experience a radical, life-changing journey through the sounds of my diverse guests. I hope that each sound you hear on this show will strengthen your faith, encourage your dreams, and challenge you to awaken the greatness within you.
Drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We're going to drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We're going to drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We come to drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new values, and a new experience.
Ladies and gentlemen, the star of the show,
Lamar Darnell Shields.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to my show. I'm your host, Dr. Lamar Darnell Shields, the creator of Sound Balming. And my goal with this show is to introduce you to people with the ideas that will help you unlock your full potential. There's an old saying you might have seen floating around the internet that states, those who tell the stories rule the world. Even without modern neurological research that proves storytelling is the best way to capture people's attention, bake information to their memories, and forge close personal bonds, humanity has always inherently known that people crave and seek out stories almost as much as food and water. Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie says, many stories matter, and stories have been used to dispose and to malign, but stories can also be used to empower and to humanize. Stories can break the dignity of people, but stories can also repair the broken dignity. Well, my next guest said he's an open book and a vulnerable storyteller and stigma-destroying speaker, podcaster, and event host. His story of struggle is familiar with the millions of people around the world who also struggle with issues of mental health, substance misuse, and addiction. The survivor of two overdoses, an overdose and now long-term recovery, he founded Choose Your Struggle in 2015 with two distinct goals, ending a stigma and ensuring that those who struggle receive the help they deserve. A fervent believer in radical honesty and the simple fact that neither struggle nor recovery should be treated as a one-size-fits-all. In addition, he's making this conversation even more accessible when he launched this amazing podcast. And his podcast seeks to educate listeners on issues of mental health and substance abuse. The show combines vulnerable storytelling and expert education around the topics of mental health, substance misuse, and recovery. Welcome into the Soundbombing Studios, my man Jay Schiffman. Jay, welcome to Soundbombing, brother. How are you doing? And let our listeners know where you are calling in from.
Well, it's an honor to be here. I really appreciate you having me. Thank you so much. I am Jay Schiffman, and I'm coming here live from Philadelphia, PA.
Philadelphia, the home of the Roots.
That's right.
Mill, Jill, Scott, the home of music. We talk about the Motown sound. Philly has its own sound, man. Let our listeners know how you're doing. I always like to do a check-in because you know we're in a pandemic, right? So I like to do that check-in just to make sure my guests are doing okay.
I mean, now that you're talking about the Roots, man, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm going to have to go put on Things Fall Apart as soon as this is over, you know.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The Roots are now touring with, let me back up. The Roots and Music Soul Child are touring together. It's actually the Roots tour, and I've seen both of them perform, and I heard
That's
this
great.
Tour. It's amazing, man. So let's just get down to it. Since we're talking about the Roots, Black Thought, Questlove, great storytellers, man. And
yes.
I know one of the things that you do is you consistently talked about unpacking and sharing your story. First of all, before we get into your story, what is the importance of storytelling?
Oh, man. I think of it two ways. Number one, the education piece, right? We know, and you kind of touched on this when you were saying your introduction, but we know from neurological study that our brains learn better through story. I can tell you all the facts and figures, and those are important. I don't want to minimize that because they really hit these points home. But the way that our brains process information, we seek that story. And so I can teach you more by telling story, by illustrating through story than I can just by dropping facts and figures. But that's secondary to the real importance of story, which is just flat out entertainment. You know, we all love a good story. We love to be entertained.
So what makes a good story? What makes a good story and what makes good storytelling?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, the two things that I look for in other storytellers, when I know, you know, I host a couple of storytelling events, and when I'm sort of auditioning people to be on those, I look for two things. And number one, there's that vulnerability piece. There's that desire to open up and to share with other people. If you don't have that, you could tell the most amazing story, but it'll come off dry. It'll come off boring. You have to feel it. And if you don't, it's not going to be interesting to me. It's not going to be interesting to my audience. So that's number one. And then that number two is that excitement. You have to want this story to be told. If I could tell you the most amazing story, but if I'm just like, yeah, man, you know, and then this thing happened, that's not fun for anybody. That's not even fun for me. You have to want it. You have to be in it. You have to be excited about that story.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You may know, and our listeners may not know, and even though when this show airs, we're already going to pass the date, but today, September 13th, 1996, one of the greatest storytellers around was killed in Las Vegas, Tupac Amaru Shakur. And Jay, what's interesting, last night I hosted here in Baltimore, I hosted a storytelling series. We do a storytelling series called The Shortcut Show. And man, Jay, I had two storytellers. I tell people they're sharing stories. Mouse, who actually was Tupac's right hand. They've been friends since they were 12 years old. Went to Roland Park Middle, then went to School of the Arts, and they performed all over. And then this woman named Deborah Taylor, you know, Jay, she met Tupac when he was 13. He entered a contest at the Baltimore Enoch Free Library, downtown Baltimore. He was so poor, didn't have money to get to the contest. And so she picked him up, picked this guy, Mouse, his name is Dana. They call him Dana Mouse, and picked them up and drove them down. And when you talk about this woman telling the story, there's only two storytellers or two poets in the nation whose stories or whose scrolls or whose poetry is in the library in Baltimore City. And that is Edgar Allan Poe and Tupac Shakur. And so when you talk about the power of storytelling, the power of struggle, and you being a fan of music, because of course we're talking about the Roots. How can we then use our narrative to understand ourselves, others, and the world? And then in what ways, and you can answer in any particular order, in what ways can stories be a burden to us? And then you're going to talk about your story shortly.
Man, I'll tell you what, though. Talking about Tupac, you know, growing up, he was my favorite rapper. I got into hip-hop through the Bone Thugs, and I was probably 12 years old when I first heard East 1999, which I still maintain is one of the best albums out there. But Tupac was right behind that. I mean, he was a great storyteller. And not only that, he had it all. You know, he had the lyrics, he had the talent, but yeah, he was a great storyteller. Man, I did not know that anniversary, so thank you for that. You know, to your question, I'll answer the second one first, because this is something I hear a lot. I actually teach telling your story, and I specifically teach it to mostly to people in recovery like myself, because figuring out that narrative is so incredibly important in the act of forgiveness. For a long time, I carried around a lot of anger towards the therapist that misdiagnosed me, that led to my struggling with substance misuse and eventually addiction. And it was finally by conquering that narrative and revisiting the way that I thought of my own experience through story to help me release that anger. And so working with people in recovery, there is a lot of hurt. There's a lot of regret. There's a lot of anger. And when you can revisit that story and help that healing, and you can actually see it happen in somebody else, it's pretty wonderful to watch. And that's why I think that, again, these stories, sort of to your first question, can be so important in understanding ourselves, is that if we allow the way that somebody else tells our story to come to be synonymous with our own identity, it's never going to be authentic, number one, because nobody knows your experience like you do. Nobody knows your truth like you do. But number two, it's going to lead you to, number one, following a different path to what success looks like. You know, somebody who hasn't lived in my shoes, they can come up with what they think me healing is going to look like, and it's not going to be right. And so me following that path to success is only going to lead to failure. But number two, it's going to then internalize who we see ourselves as. And so if I'm following this other definition of what I should be or what success looks like for me, and I don't get there, it's going to weigh on me, and eventually I'm going to decide that I'm just a failure. No. It's that I'm letting somebody else decide what success looks like. I have to take that back for myself, and I can only do that by telling my own story.
So in my introduction, I started out with a quote from Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. Now, what's interesting about, before I get back to the quote, what's interesting about the three of us, all of us were TED speakers. You were a TED speaker, I was a TED speaker, and she was a TED speaker. And I don't know if you saw her TED talk. It's called The Danger of a Single Story. She grew up in Nigeria, then she came to the United States, and she talked about these stories that we tell ourselves, and she also talked about the stories that other people tell themselves. What story were you sharing with yourself that then took you down this road to taking prescription pills? And then how did you then sort of shift that narrative?
Well, I'll tell you what, number one, I've not heard her story, and I need to, sounds like, go back and listen to it, because
it's a dope story, man.
It sounds like it. And TED, as great as they are at what they are good at, one thing that they don't have a lot of representation of is people who have lived experience over learned experience. And so I was very honored to get that opportunity. And whenever I hear other people who have a similar opportunity, I'm very excited to see their speech. Now, to your question, I would actually say that the number one false narrative I was telling myself wasn't the misdiagnosis, and kind of very quickly, that was I was diagnosed with ADHD, which was real, also depression, anxiety, OCD, all of that's real. But unfortunately for me, my therapist, and I'm 12, 13, 14 years old at this time, saw all of this sort of teenage guy going through puberty on medication, also struggling with his mental health, all of that perfect storm wrapped up into one. And he gave that perfect storm a new name, which was bipolar disorder, and that was incorrect. And that's a mistake that cost me a lot. He put me on medication a couple years later. But my early 20s, I was completely struggling with substance misuse, before eventually succumbing to full-blown addiction. all of that was sort of, I didn't understand that misdiagnosis. I was a kid and then I was an early teenager really struggling, but I wasn't angry at myself for that. What I was angry about was the summer of 2009, I was completely addicted. I couldn't wake up. If I didn't immediately take a handful of pills, I would start going into withdrawal. I mean, my life was really struggling. And then I did something that I do regret. And that was, my therapist was telling me I had this issue. He'd been telling me this for over half a decade, going on 7-8 years now. And I could not get better. And so I internalized this, sort of going back to what I was saying before about somebody else was telling my story. And I had said, okay, if he says I have this and I trust him, I must have it. But I'm not getting better with these pills that are supposed to make me better. So clearly there's something wrong with me. And that's when I gave up hope. And that's when I attempted suicide twice in 2 days. And the second time I overdosed. And so to your question, the narrative that I was believing was that the issue was me, that there was no other possible alternative. That I was a lost cause, that I was hopeless. And in reality, it was a misdiagnosis. It was a therapist who was committing a criminal act of overprescribing me. And that was a complete, I'm lucky I'm still here. And it's all because I believed this narrative that wasn't my own.
What were you getting from the prescription drugs that life was not giving you? What were you getting from the prescription drugs that your parents weren't giving you? What were you getting from the prescription drugs, the social media, that your teachers, that the imam, that the rabbi, Tupac, Bone Thugs and Harmony, whoever you listen to, you know, heavy metal, rock and roll. What were you getting from those prescription drugs? And show us what your drug of choice was that you weren't getting from those other things.
Yeah. So in reality, I was being taught from an early age by this therapist that whenever I was struggling with an emotion, an ill feeling, the answer was to take prescription pills. And so I wasn't taught good self-regulation. I wasn't taught good mental health care. And when things started to spiral for me, which was early college, I had this sort of ill habit already in me of, well, I've been told I have this, you know, issue of mental health, which I didn't have, but that gave me an excuse to say, okay, I can't control these emotions. I have to just take these pills. And so it was almost like it's not what it wasn't giving me. It was the opposite. Was again, going back to this story, this was the story I was being told. And so I kept telling it to myself. And obviously that led me down a really negative direction. I was on over 5 different drugs every day. The one that was my ultimate crutch was Klonopin, which I was taking. If you've ever seen the show House, I was popping those by a handful multiple times a day, like peanut M&Ms, man. I mean, it was bad. But you know, there were also a lot of other things mixed up in it. I mean, the drugs were just the symptom. They weren't the cause.
So walk us through that feeling, because I want people that have never experienced some type of addiction to understand, what were you getting from that? Like, as you were popping those pills, walk us through what was going through your mind, the emotions that was coming, you know, to the forefront, the things that are around you. Walk us through that experience as much as you can.
Yeah. So to be very clear here, addiction is a medical term. We toss this word around a lot, but what we really mean most of the time is substance misuse, right? The kid binge drinking, that's misuse. He's not addicted. But I was addicted by the definition, which is mental and physical dependence on this thing. It doesn't have to be a drug, although most of the time it is. And so for me, what that meant was twofold. It meant, number one, like I was saying before, I physically could not survive without these drugs at that moment. I would wake up, and if I didn't immediately take them, I would spend the next hour wrapped around my toilet going through withdrawals, right? So at that point, I no longer was making the choice. I was taking them because if I didn't, I would be sick. But the other side of that was the mental part. And the mental part was, You know, if I was having a bad day, it wasn't, all right, you know, now what is in my self-care toolbox, or let me sit with these emotions. What is this negative emotion telling me? You know, why am I feeling this way? It was, well, I guess I need to pop some more pills. I guess I need to, you know, if it was the weekend, I guess I need to go snort some more cocaine. I guess I need to go trips on some shrooms because I want to get out of my head for a while. So that was what was going on with me, was that the drugs were my first choice, my last choice, and everything in between. There wasn't any other options. I had not been taught good habits, and I didn't, because I had been given this diagnosis, I didn't think there was anything wrong with what I was doing, because I was being told that this was the right move. Okay, you're struggling, take more pills.
And so talk to me about the turnaround, the point where you said, enough is enough, I'm going to sort of quote unquote kick this habit, I'm going to move forward, pull myself up by my bootstraps and keep it moving. Talk to us about that process, and what was that like? You know, was it, you know, was it you engaging somebody who in the community who was going through the process as well? Was it, you know, an aha moment, a spiritual connection, a video that you saw? What was that moment where you said, this, enough is enough for me?
Well, as I mentioned before, I attempted suicide twice and I overdosed. And the night of my overdose set my life off in this other direction. That night, sort of starting with that night, because we live in the United States, unfortunately, when someone called 911 because I was going into overdose, a cop showed up at my door. He put me in handcuffs, threw me against the side of his car, all that jazz. Took me to the hospital where I spent the night handcuffed to a bed. And woke up the next day in a lockdown unit where I spent 3 weeks. I was discharged from there to my parents' house, where they sent me away to a long-term care facility, what we would have called a mental institution 50 years ago. And it was there that I started to have this realization that maybe things weren't the way I thought they were. You know, my therapist, I started to meet other people there who had bipolar disorder, what I'd been diagnosed with, and I didn't, like, what they were going through didn't look like what I was going through. And then I started meeting people there who were struggling with addiction. And I went, oh, that I know. That looks familiar. So I asked my therapist if I could get off of these prescription pills. And he said, no. He said the only reason he would let me get off my medication is if I agreed to then immediately start over with new drugs. And I said, that's not what I'm trying to do. I've been on medication since I was 12. I'm 23 at this time. I want to know who I am as a person without these drugs. And he said, no. So luckily for me, even though I was there against my will, I wasn't court ordered. And so I was able to check myself out. And I did that. I went to go live with my grandmother, and over the next almost 4 months, went through what's called step down detox. And that's the opposite of cold turkey, because a lot of people don't know this. Cold turkey can kill you, and it does kill a lot of people. You know, we've kind of let this story be told that cold turkey is the way to do it. Like, if you're in a hospital, sure, go for it. But if you're at home, I mean, that's not safe. So it took me almost 4 months to step down slowly off these drugs. And I'll tell you what, you know, the spring of 2010 is really where I started my life over again. But it took me a solid 5 more years to get healthy again. You know, that part was just as time consuming and difficult, and more so than the actual detox itself.
So as I'm listening to you talk about law enforcement pulling you up and considering you a criminal instead of someone who's dealing with an illness, what message do you have for those who maybe work in the law enforcement field, or what message do you have for just community folks who don't know how to handle a person who's been misusing drugs and who's now addicted to this, or who also has this disease? Because there's no way in hell that you should have been handcuffed. And we're starting to see that not only with folks who are dealing with mental health patients, and there are some law enforcement folks who listen to the show. There's some districts, Jay, you know, that are doing a great job dealing with mental health disorders, dealing with people that are addicted to some form of substance. But for me to hear you say that, man, I was locked up, went to jail, and you got a chance to see, this is what I have. I don't have what those other folks. Walk me through that process of helping people who don't understand what this not only did to you as an individual, but what are some strategies that you can share with other folks who might have someone who has been misusing drugs, but then also to some law enforcement agency or organization that don't really have a strong strategy to deal with people who are dealing with what you dealt with?
Well, I'll tell you what, man. I go back to that night a lot. I during the first days of what we now would call the Defund the Police movement last year, I posted this story online. And there were so many people who came out of the woodwork like, I'm so sorry you went through that. But there were a couple people that were like, I don't understand what you're mad about. Like, you're still alive today. And I was like, yeah, but why are those the alternatives, right? I mean, that policeman, I don't think he was intentionally trying to be a mean about this situation. He had no idea what to do with me. Here I was in a medical emergency. He had no training, and they sent him, you know, so it's unfair to him that he's there. And if I had died in the back of his car that night, that would have been on him. And I don't think he wanted that. So my kind of bigger call is like, why are we sending police in that moment anyways? You know, he couldn't have helped me. He made that very clear by doing what he's taught to do, handcuffing me and roughing me up. So my bigger question is, why do we see this as the only thing we can do instead of saying in that moment, sure, if you need to send a cop to feel safe, I get it, I'm fine. But then send somebody who actually understands, a medical professional. And to that cop, try to remember, in that moment, I wasn't dangerous at all. I could barely get myself off a couch. He had to drag me out that door. So while he may have been annoyed that instead of out there catching bad guys, whatever it is he thought he should be doing with this night, he was, you know, dragging my ass out the door, I get that. But also try to remember, I'm still a human. You know, I'm still a guy who is so badly in need of help that I am in overdose. I have intentionally put myself there. And even if I didn't, I'm not choosing to be in overdose, right? I am in such a bad state mentally that this was my alternative. This was where I was, where I was. So try to have some compassion and some empathy and remember that this is a human being that's struggling.
So I like what you said. You said this officer probably didn't mean any ill will toward me, but he didn't have the skills to help me. But I know, Jay, you do. So talk to my listeners about how you are helping others kick the habit, and then share with us the choose your struggle. What does that actually mean?
Well, I'll say the number one thing that I'm trying to do is preach about this idea. It's sort of broadly called harm reduction, but in reality, what it is just remembering that people can't get better if they're dead. And so when I work with families, which I used to do a lot of, I'm doing less now during COVID, but it was a lot of helping the families understand that some of their bad habits were leading to things getting unintentionally worse. Quick story, because I think that this really encompasses what I'm trying to say here. I was working with a family down in South Carolina where I used to live. And the mother, it was the son that was struggling. And the mother, they just didn't get along. They butted heads. And so tragically, the mom kicked him out of the house when she found a needle behind his dresser. Now, in her defense, I can't imagine what she feels like. I'm not a mom. I don't have kids. In his defense, he didn't even know it was there. It was an old needle from years before. She kicks him out. He's now homeless. If you are struggling, what are you going to do in that moment? You and I, rational people, we can say, yeah, he's going to go buy heroin. If you're struggling with heroin use, you're going to go buy heroin. He does this and he overdoses. Now, luckily, he was brought back and everything was fine. But the mom could not conceptualize how she was at fault here. And so helping the mom understand that you're leading from fear, you're leading from anger, is directly contributing to his misuse, was something that was very important to me as someone who had been in that young boy's shoes. So that is sort of a bigger issue here of I can't even imagine what that mom was feeling like, but having the mindfulness, having the self-awareness to step back and say, am I helping or am I hurting? And if the answer is that you are not doing everything you can to keep this person alive until you can get them help, then you are hurting. So that is sort of my biggest message is I know it's not easy. I'm not saying it's going to be. Nobody wishes this on anybody. But remember that this is still that person you love, even if they're hurting and even if they're using in a way that's unsafe.
So why did you choose a name, Choose Your Struggle?
So Choose Your Struggle comes from when I first started speaking 6 years ago. I had this realization that when I was at my absolute worst, which was again 2008, 2009, I had lost the ability to choose what I was going to struggle for. I'm born to privilege. I acknowledge that every single day. And growing up, because of that privilege, I had the ability to choose what my struggles were going to be. And when I was at my worst, I didn't have that anymore. It was just getting off the couch, avoiding withdrawals. These were chosen for me. And so now that I'm back into this healthy place, I try to impress upon that, express upon everybody that they do have a choice at some level. Now, that's not saying that life isn't dealing you some bad hands or making some choices for you, but everybody does have, at least at the granular level, some form of a choice. And it's easy to overlook that if we're so caught up in a lot of the other ways life might be swirling us around a little bit.
Well, I know a lot of people are struggling right now because of COVID. A lot of people have been quarantined. They are definitely becoming more addicted to a variety of things. So what message do you have for that individual who is stuck at home or stuck somewhere and he or she is going into their mind and thinking that I'm not enough, thinking that woe is me, thinking that life has given me, dealt me a bad hand? What could you say to them that will hopefully shift their thinking?
Look, we're all feeling a certain way over the last year and a half. You know, I mean, this has been something none of us could have planned for and none of us are going to ever forget. And it would be really easy to say we're all in this together, but we're being shown that's not the case. I would say that the number one thing I always say when I'm interviewed and whenever I talk on any sort of thing is that a reminder that there are people out there who love you. There are people out there who want to hear from you, even if you don't feel it in that moment. And trust me, as you've now heard me say, I was there where I thought there was nobody that even wanted me around. And I was completely wrong. I will say this, though, if you truly feel that way, that there's nobody that wants to listen, reach out. I say that every time because those of us who do this work have a saying, and that is we'd rather spend 2 hours listening to you today than 2 hours at your funeral tomorrow. So please reach out and know that we are at some granular level, again, to use that term, we are all going through this. And so if you just need someone to give you a little bit of affirmative, like, yep, it sucks. We're all hurting. I'll be there to listen and tell you that we'll find a way through this together.
So you said we all are going through quite a bit. And I want to go back to something that you said. I come from privilege. I know I come from a strong family with a lot of privilege. How does a kid, then young man, then older man, go from having everything that he could want, then decide that he wants more, or I'm not getting enough? And then you go down this path. How does that actually happen to someone?
Well, I'll tell you what, man. You know, we don't know all of the variables that contribute towards addiction. We know a lot of them. You know, we know your environment's a big piece of it. We know your genetics are a big piece of it. And there's a five or six variables that we are aware of, but we don't even know to what extent. And so I think it would be really easy for me to say, you know, I just wanted more out of life, or I wasn't happy. And like those things were true. But, you know, so was my next brother. I'm the oldest of four boys. My next brother, Jake, and I are very similar in a lot of ways. He also got put on a lot of medication and he ended up fine. And so the quite simply, the answer is I don't know. And I wish I did know what made his and my past completely diverge. But if I figure that out, I think that I would be the next, scientist of the year or whatever, because that's an answer we're all still looking for.
Well, if you can't figure that out, let's go here. Yeah. What message would you say to the younger Jay Schiffman?
Well, I would tell 23-year-old Jay that not to give up hope. I would also, this is something I say a lot, I would go back to my teenage years and I would tell myself and my family that getting a second opinion on your mental health diagnosis is not only okay, but it's a good thing. You know, my aunt recently was battling cancer and she got a third, fourth, and fifth opinion on everything. But why is it that when most people get a very serious diagnosis of mental health, nobody ever gets a second opinion? We have this weird, dual dichotomy there. Well, we can't do that anymore. We have to get second opinions. And I know I wish I had.
Jay, how can my listeners get in contact with you?
Well, you can find me at my website, which is jayschiffman.com, or search for me on any social media. I'm either Choose Your Struggle or Jay Schiffman on all social media. And my podcast, Choose Your Struggle Podcast, is at every place you get your podcast.
Jay, what impact do you want to have in the world?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. If I can help end stigma around mental health and substance misuse, I'll sleep happy in my grave.
Hey, Jay, it's been an honor hanging out with you today, but you cannot leave the second part of the show. Cannot leave yet. The second part of the show is called the Super Bomb Questions. We'll know a little bit more about you, but the difference from this, from the second part, from the first, is that I'm going to ask a question, and I need you to respond as quickly as possible. But I know you can do that because you talk fast, brother. You ready?
Jay, I'm ready, man. Let's do it.
What's your favorite word?
Love.
What's your favorite quote?
Oh, man. I know the world is there for me. I'm young and I'm doing what I want to do by Paul Pierce.
What's your superpower?
Oh, man. Me personally, I would say it's empathy.
What's your spirit animal?
A koala.
What brings you to tears of joy?
Oh, seeing my wife and my dog happy.
What brings you to tears of sorrow?
Oh, man, seeing either of them in pain.
What do you wish you had more time to do?
Spend time with the ones I love who are no longer in Cincinnati or sadly no longer alive.
What is the book of books you've given out quite a bit and why?
I've given a lot of copies of the book called The Abstinence Myth by Adee Jaffe, and he was the first person to help me understand that you could be in recovery but not be sober. And I just want other people to understand like what my life is like, and so I give people that book a lot.
What values do you live by every single day?
My mother taught me the do-say ratio, which is if you say you're going to do it, you better do it.
What do you wish you had more time to do?
Oh, man, probably just continue following this passion.
Jay Shiffman, if you were in the Mr. America talent competition, what would your talent be?
Oof, probably trivia.
A trivia guy. I appreciate that. I love trivia as well, man. Jay, it's been an honor hanging out with you today. I'm telling you, go check out his site. Listen to his podcast. Listen, connect with him. Many of us are going through our own struggles and our addiction, and Jay gave us some very specific strategies on what we can do to honor sort of where we're going and not keep telling that story over and over again, a story of lack. So Jay, thanks for hanging out with me, brother. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
And I also want to thank my amazing super duper producer, Nicole Klimpaka, Supremacy, for that dope music, and all of you for listening. Listen, I need you to subscribe. We're on every platform. Leave a comment. Let us know how we are doing. Let us know if you want us to bring on any of the special guests that you may know. And if you want to know more about me, go to drdrlds.com. Check me out. But listen, do something for someone other than yourself today. You've been listening to Sound Bombing. Peace.
The Super Bomb Questions are brought to you by Mountain Made CBD. Mountain Made is changing the CBD game by offering a line of high-dose CBD tablets at an affordable price. Their products are THC-free and third-party tested for accuracy, cleanliness, and potency. Their products, which ship nationwide, include Build for CBD saturation, Boost for precision titration, and Recover for rest and rehab. With 9 years experience in hemp and fitness, Mountain Made's founders are focused on creating a quality product to help those who live an activated lifestyle. Check out mountainmade.life. Again, that's mountainmade.life to find out more about how their products can help you crush life. Remember, their products ship nationwide. Go check out their website today and follow them on social media. At Mountain Made, that's the @ MNTMADE. Our staff at Sound Bombing uses Build before a morning workout, which helps to push our bodies to a whole new level on a daily basis. Try Build, try Boost, try Recover. Our staff is using these products to enhance our active lifestyle naturally, and we are crushing life with Mountain Made CBD. And you can too. Start today by going to mountainmade.life and ordering Build, Boost, Recover, or the multitude of other products that they have which will enhance your lifestyle. I promise you, you won't regret it.